HRHeadquarters.ie, the podcast.
Okay, so today I'm joined by Jessica Burke, the fertility detective. Jessica, you're very welcome to the HR Headquarters podcast.
Hi there, thank you so much for having me.
Jessica, why don't you just tell the listeners what you do?
Sure. So I have been specializing in the area of reproductive health for the past going on nearly 17 years now. And essentially, it's my job to help people to figure out what's stopping them from getting pregnant and staying pregnant.
Very good. Just size this for me. How many people at any given time are going through this process, or how many people are having issues?
Very, very many is the short answer. So around the world, if you're looking statistically speaking at the incidence of fertility issues or for those who are struggling with recurrent miscarriage, you're looking at least one in six. And just for the listeners to compare that, let's say, to something we're all very familiar with, such as breast cancer, the odds of breast cancer for people around the world is one in nine. So that means that you're pretty much guaranteed there's somebody you know who's actually going through this, even if they haven't told you about it. Because, of course, unfortunately, it is still an area that is shrouded in so much mystery, taboo, stigma. It's very much an issue of silence. And that's why hopefully we're going to shed some light on that today.
Okay, so Jessica, when you say going through it, what does it look like for most people?
So it really depends, of course, on the individual circumstance, because for some people, they might struggle for, say, a year, 6 months to a year. You're usually told that if you've been trying for 6 months over 35, seek assistance. If you're trying for a year under 35, seek assistance. Now, that, of course, is open to interpretation, because you might have very clear knowledge yourself that actually I've had problems with my period, or there's something that just feels amiss. So, of course, you can go and get help sooner. But for many, it can be a very protracted process where it might take years. You might have to have multiple cycles of fertility treatment in order to achieve your goal. For those, of course, suffering miscarriage, that process is very drawn out, because you find out you're pregnant, then it would be a number of weeks before perhaps the pregnancy loss occurs, and then going through the whole rigmarole afterwards of how it is dealt with and managed. So for some people, that will need to be done surgically, for others with medication or the watch and wait approach at home. All of that, of which is very traumatic for people, and is something that unfortunately isn't really accounted for currently in the workplace.
Yeah, I was just about to say. So, I mean, obviously something as traumatic as that is naturally going to have a massive impact on people and their partners potentially as well. How do most organizations handle it, or what's your experience of that?
From what I've seen, it varies across the board. So some bigger companies, the sort of worldwide large companies we'd be familiar with, might have policies in place for this. I'm sure many of your listeners are aware, maybe probably going on 6-7 years ago now, two big corporate companies came out and said that, oh, we're going to offer egg freezing to our female employees so that they can actually continue to work. And that was actually met with mixed reviews by people, because some people felt that it was actually just a way of luring people into a false sense of security about their fertility, because frozen eggs are not the same as frozen embryos. They don't have as high a success rate, versus having proper policies in place, which is actually about supporting people with what they need going through this. And what they need is flexibility. I think in this day and age, especially after what we've gone through the last couple of years, it isn't an unreasonable request to say, well, look, as long as you hit your targets and you're hitting what's required for your projects that need to be completed, then, you know, what you do with the rest of your time is your own. Now, the problem, of course, with that is that for people who are front facing with their work. So, for example, I would have dealt with many teachers over the years, and I witnessed firsthand how intensely stressful it was for any teachers during both COVID. So you can imagine they are having to make excuses for why they're having to go to a fertility clinic appointment, for example, or a gynae or doctor appointment. And you can't just walk out of the classroom and leave your class. They need support there. There needs to be a more flexible pattern that they can adjust to so that they can actually get to these appointments. And so, yeah, that is definitely why it has been extremely stressful for teachers in particular, and any front-facing, maybe say pharmacists, things like that, who can't just walk off to attend their appointments.
And Jessica, is it like, would you consider the subject, I know you personally wouldn't, but is the subject considered taboo, do you think? Is that why people don't talk about it as much, perhaps in the workplace as well as socially?
Yes. Unfortunately, yes. I mean, you know, I have been at this a long time. So I've certainly seen the changes that have occurred during the years. And actually, one of the biggest changes, I think, has actually been the growth in social media. Of course, there are pros and cons to social media, but one of the major pros that I've seen is that it has really helped people to communicate and share their story and realize that they aren't alone, that there is support out there for them, and understand as well how to advocate for themselves, to realize that, no, this is a human right. I am actually entitled to ask for this support, and this is a medical issue. It's not a case of, you know, just go adopt, as some awful people online might have told those who are trying to conceive. So, you know, it's definitely a very complex issue. I think if you're looking at society as a whole, why is there still this taboo and stigma? I mean, that's very deeply entrenched. You know, that goes back to religion, that goes back to cultural norms. If you look around the world, there'd be very different thoughts on fertility. I remember a client I had before who was originally from the Philippines, and she was very young. The problem was on her partner's side, there was an issue with the sperm. And I remember her speaking to me about it and how she could not speak to her mother about this issue, because for her culture, it would be viewed as a failure on his part. Like, he wasn't a partner that she should be with if he can't give her children, you know. And it's a very, I suppose, obviously archaic or simplistic way of looking at things, but we have to understand these cultural nuances do have a part to play in this, and how people approach the issue and discuss it. And of course, fundamentally, I think as well, when you're talking about anything to do with fertility, it invariably comes back to sex. And that makes people uncomfortable. So that is why you will find within the workplace, of course, when anyone talks about, you know, having to go for a scan or a gynae appointment, suddenly they sort of don't want to hear it. And it can make it very difficult for people.
So as HR professionals, what can we do in the workplace to make things better, maybe to advocate for those people as well as them advocating for themselves? And if you don't mind as well, Jessica, you touched on something there a moment ago about it being a human right. Where does it stand, or where does do these treatments stand in terms of legal and all of that sort of thing?
Yes. So taking the first point about what can be done for people, in terms of the policies in the workplace, there does need to be something set down, and they're trying to do that at the moment. So currently there is a bill that has got through the Senate as of last summer that they're waiting for it to go through the Dáil, although I think they're going to change the wording of it. Just for your listeners' perspective, my primary degree was law, so before I got into fertility. So that's why I'd have an interest in this. But so the Organization of Working Time, it's a reproductive health related leave bill of 2021. They are trying to amend an existing bill from, I think, 1997. And I think their discussion now is, well, actually, should it be a standalone bill, because it is that important. And their goal really is obviously to implement change, which will then become law. And all employers will have to adhere to these new laws, which would give 20 days leave for anyone who experiences early miscarriage. Now, presumably, they will extend that to anyone who has to have a termination for medical reasons or later term loss. I'm sure the wording of the bill will be decided upon. And also 10 days leave, paid leave, for any fertility related appointments. Now, that's huge. It's definitely a step in the right direction, because what is currently happening, I think it's so important for people to understand this. If you take, for example, the fact that in Ireland, and this is covered in the news recently, we feature very low on the European sphere for fertility treatment, in that we do not offer paid fertility treatment. There is nothing that is afforded, you know, on the health care system to give someone a free cycle of IVF the way there would be in the UK, for example. So if you take that financial burden that already exists, and you then add to that the fact that when you're going through this trauma, you are being forced to take annual leave or sick days, that's completely untenable. and very, very upsetting for people. To then go to the second part of your question, when you were talking about it being a human right, the point is that, yes, you are entitled to access of care. And I think until fairly recently, probably within the last decade, it was not being perceived as infertility issues, was not being perceived as a medical issue. And the fact remains is that it is a medical condition that spans many different areas. So whether it be stemming from a gynecological problem, anatomical issues of the female, immune, blood flow problems, hormone imbalance, sperm issues. Yes, there are many areas to it, but it is most definitely a medical issue.
What are the best companies doing that in your experience?
Usually the larger, more worldwide conglomerates. So I've even seen this from not just the fertility policies, but their sort of focus on health and well-being, because this is, of course, a mental health issue as well. And that's something which has to be acknowledged also, is that if this is being dismissed, you know, if this culture of silence is allowed to continue, that's something that people internalize. So the best ones that I have seen, actually, I'll just look here because I was checking earlier for within Ireland, Google, Facebook, Dropbox, Squarespace and Airbnb appear to have policies, but not all of them make them available to the public, as in they would only share the details of their fertility benefits with an actual employee. But that's something, it's a start. But above all, really, it doesn't matter what policies currently exist in a particular environment, you have to advocate for them. And this is, of course, where it gets tricky, because you then have the issue of a person's right to privacy as well. And, you know, how do you balance those two things? As I've certainly encountered, you know, for many of my clients over the years, the problem with, well, how do I approach this issue? I mean, I say to people, say, look, it's just a personal health issue. You shouldn't have to go into detail about it, no more than anyone else does who, let's say, is going through cancer treatment, for example. The only difference there being that it's less taboo and people are feeling more comfortable speaking about it. But I'm just thinking of a client I had last year who, of course, I mean, we've been through COVID now for what, we're into our second year. And she was opting for egg freezing because, as we all know, it was very difficult to meet a partner. And she was working in a very male dominated environment. And it was in the field of engineering. And she found it extremely difficult. It caused her so much stress that after discussion, I said to her, I said, look, you need to look at moving to a different company entirely. Like this is just not this toxic environment is actually causing more stress for you than it could possibly be worth. So yes, she ended up changing. Now that shouldn't have to happen. You know, we shouldn't have to be changing, moving from company to company to find something that's going to be more suitable to our needs. But at the same time, if that's the situation someone finds themselves in currently, I would put everything in writing. It's a lawyer in me, definitely put everything in writing, stipulate your complaints and make that very clearly known, and then move on elsewhere to somewhere that'd be more understanding. That's what you need to do.
Yeah, vote with your feet for sure in yes. that situation. What would a good policy contain in your own opinion?
The most important thing is flexibility. So something I noted in that bill is that there would also be protection there for employers, the requirement that advance notice be given. Now, I understand that, of course, and I think that's only fair. And while that is feasible for, say, something like a fertility treatment cycle, because, of course, you will be given those dates in advance by your doctor and it's all very clearly mapped out. That said, the days at which, I mean, for anyone who's actually familiar with fertility treatment, they will know what I'm talking about. But for those who aren't, just to clarify, while you can lay out the dates of proposed attendance to the clinic for scanning, those dates can change. So even if you have it all mapped out a month in advance, they might scan you and say, well, actually, we need you in on Tuesday now, not Thursday, because we need to check based on the growth of the follicles. And that is something that has to be built into this in terms of any policy or obviously what eventually gets enacted into law, that there is that flexibility there and the understanding that this is not something that can be black or white. and working with, if there's open communication between the employer and employee, that they can actually discuss, okay, so this is my workload. How can I manage this while also having the flexibility to attend these appointments? I think that's key. And any policy should absolutely make very clear that the person's right to privacy should be protected. They, beyond a medical letter, they should not have to give details of exactly what they're doing. I think that's very important as well.
And you mentioned, I think, in the proposed bill that for fertility-related appointments, it would be 10 days. Does that feel about right for you? Is that sufficient? Is that average? Is it too little?
I'm glad you picked up on that, actually, because that's exactly what I was thinking when I read it. I thought 20 days, so that's, you know, 20 working days. So that's roughly a month for miscarriage. Fair enough. Of course, arguably, some people might say that they would like more if it was a particularly devastating loss. But the 10 days, yeah, you see, in the course of a year, that's not much time, actually, because if someone, again, as anyone knows, has been through it, if you are having to go down the road of fertility treatment for whatever reason, you know, you might go through a first IVF cycle or ICSI cycle, there's various types, but a first fertility cycle, and it doesn't work out for you. So invariably, you know, you're back on the hamster wheel a couple of months later, trying again. So if you actually break down 10 days over a whole year, it isn't actually that much. I would call it a step in the right direction, but definitely more still needs to be done.
Yeah. This impacts obviously partners, families, if they are in, you know, if there is a partner or whatever involved. Should policies cover partners in this situation, do you believe?
Yes, in much the same way as over the years, you know, it has had to be fought for to have proper paternal leave, as in if you're talking about maternity leave. But when you're talking about this area and the huge trauma and grief and really a lifetime of impact on an individual or a couple, then yes, absolutely, they have to be accounted for. You know, if you're talking about someone who's gone through a pregnancy loss, well, I would argue for someone who's in that deep state of despair, they should not be left at home alone. I truly believe that they should have their chosen partner, support person, someone is able to be there with them. Otherwise, we will have a lot to answer for in years to come.
And I'm guessing the proposed legislation doesn't cover that.
As far as I'm aware, they've definitely referenced it from what I've read, but I don't think they have fully built it in that it would be both partners necessarily that could take leave. It clearly states we'll provide women with up to 20 days leave. It hasn't specified partners as well.
Okay. And final thing, if you don't mind, Jessica, for anyone out there listening, I think sometimes when you hear about these stunning benefits packages, it is the types of companies you mentioned earlier. Obviously, lots of people are working in more modest sized organizations. What can the average HR manager in the average company in Ireland do in the immediate future? What can they do to help?
Definitely taking the initiative. Don't wait for people to come to you. Okay, like I said, the stats here are 1 in 6, arguably, in depending on which research you look at, 1 in 4. I mean, it is astoundingly common. But yet still so few people are aware of it because of this silence culture. So if you're working in HR, I would highly recommend that you take the first step, that you create, you know, for whatever size company it is, your own proposal about what they would hope to be able to offer. And again, remember, this isn't necessarily, like I said, financial benefit. It doesn't actually have to require much on the part of the company. The biggest thing actually is simply acknowledgement that we know the stats on this. We know that some of you are likely going through this, whether you choose to share that with us or not. And that is your choice, right to privacy and all that, because it is a very sensitive topic for people. But look, here's what we're going to do. Here's how we're going to make it easier for any of you in the company to be able to attend appointments if that is something you need to be doing.
Excellent. Jessica, how can people get in contact with you if they want to continue the conversation?
Sure. So on Instagram, they'll find me at The Fertility Detective. And also my website is jessicaburke.com.
J Jessica, thanks a million for joining us today.
No problem. Thank you.
HRHeadquarters.ie, the podcast.